This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on.
Made it through the weekend. It was pretty good.
Made it through.
Hey, some people don't make it through.
Made it through on weekend. You're like, weekend's supposed to be celebratory. You made it through. Like, you're supposed to make it through the work week.
Yeah, sometimes, though, the weekend, if you're a husband or a dad, and, you know, you got
more work.
Yeah. So sometimes it's like
sports activities.
Oh, man. Yeah. Sometimes.
Parks.
Yes.
All that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't. Sometimes you're like, man, I can't wait till structure comes.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why I said I made it through. It's not bad. It's just.
But then you find yourself tired, right? Because you just want to go. You just want to get home. Like for me this weekend, you just want to go. You want to get home. You want to watch some NBA playoffs.
Oh.
My bad, man. Steve, for context, is a Clippers fan.
Yes.
So you just
Kawhi
for punishment.
Stop it.
I've been bro. I mean, the facts are the facts.
Yeah. But do I not ride with my team?
You do. Oh no, that's definitely a fact. You rock the Clippers hats. You rock the and there's no knock against the Clippers.
You can't.
But I'm
excited. Look, I.
This is the furthest they've been. They've never been to a conference finals, right?
We ain't going no further. We not. You know what I'm...
Playoff P.
He's showing up, though.
I mean, just not on the free throw line, but yeah.
Stop it.
Did you hear what Shannon Sharp said about
him? What did he say?
He called him polyester P.
Oh.
You know why polyester?
Why?
Because when you heat polyester up, it melts.
Oh!
You put some heat on it, he melts.
Come on, Shay.
Playoff B.
Yeah, it's tough.
It would be a much different series if Kawhi Leonard was playing.
I believe it may be a worse series.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on why you think that.
We look at all these guys that are getting together with other superstars. Mm-hmm.
Brooklyn.
I'm not a huge fan of Leonard,
just in general, or
of
on
him
that
coming
team?
Coming to say hypothetically come to the Lakers, I mean the Clippers. Because Dame is such an ISO player, he could give you 50, but he doesn't play defense.
Okay,
right. And if when he goes in those 50 points when he's going cold. When he goes cold and he's shooting a 38-footer, is dunking off the rim, and the other team is getting the ball and sprinting down
and
the court.
And then transition.
And transition. If you're going to have those type of all-stars, you got to have some of those all-stars. You got to have your specialists. And I think teams are starting to see that. If you're going to have some specialists you got to have guys that show up on both ends of the court.
Two-way players. You got to have two-way players. In today's NBA, you got to have those guys.
And they're not there.
And that's why. I think the Clippers roster overall, the only thing I've always come to is Paul George and Kawhi too similar? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have LeBron and AD. Complementary players. AD can do some things LeBron can do. LeBron can do some things AD can't do. You look at, even though Brooklyn got eliminated, you look at KD and James Harden and Kyrie. They all do something. They all do things that are similar, but then they all have distinct differences. Kawhi and Paul George are very similar.
So do
players.
You think Paul George plays just as good of defense?
He's a good defensive player.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know what I'm saying? Like, complementary players is the only thing that I see with that particular duo, that they're not that complementary. It's almost like wash, rinse, repeat. We got the same guy that...
You know what it seems like, though? He seemed to play better as the head guy versus...
Paul?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that.
He seems to be an outstanding Batman.
Yeah.
He has gotten lost in translation in the game with of Kawhi. Being a Robin.
Yeah. And everybody can't do that, right? Remember how much Chris Bosh struggled when LeBron came to the Heat? It's different when you're used to being the guy who gets buckets.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have to take the second seat, or with Chris Bosh, that third seat.
I'm a basketball fan that knows zero about basketball.
We always joke about this, like when we chilling. You know more about basketball than
but
you get.
But I don't feel confident talking about it. So I look at it purely from a, I don't even look at statistics anymore.
Mm.
I just look at, like, I watch a guy play. I'm really surprised how James Harden morphed his game.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? I also look at, people are talking about Kevin Durant. He can't win the big one. He carried that team. He missed the shot. Okay, great.
Yeah.
I just look at it purely as a, not as a purist, not as someone that knows the game, not as athleticism, being an athlete. I just kind of go, man, I love watching basketball. Mm-hmm. I love playoff basketball.
Me too. I'll watch every single playoff game.
Yeah.
My wife knows when playoffs are on, I'm watching. Unless it becomes like a complete beatdown, like that Hawks game the other night. Which, man, how about the Hawks, man?
That's interesting.
Where you say that's interesting?
Because you have a head coach that didn't want the job,
mm-hmm.
an interim head coach, and they didn't really want to give him the job. They ran out the other guy.
Yeah.
And I find it extremely interesting with Trae Young. And this is the part about sports that you got to be careful of.
Okay.
When you draft your franchise, and then you allow who's going to coach by how they work with one individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that one individual doesn't buy into, or he doesn't like how he's being coached. And then that guy gets fired.
Yeah.
And then now you see, you know, quote unquote, you got to give him the buy in. He signed that check.
Yeah.
Right. And then now, you got a guy, Holiday. Holiday is putting them paws on you.
Right. Yeah, but he's always, Holiday is a defensive monster. That's what you want him to do.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I find the interesting is now.
But Trey's still getting some buckets. Now.
He's still, he's getting how many?
Buckets. Buckets.
Yeah, some buckets. That's what I'm saying is, he's a young guy that still needs to develop.
Yeah.
Will he be a superstar?
Yeah.
I want to see, can he come out next year and start where he finished in the playoffs?
Oh, that's a good point. I also think they got a sneaky good roster too.
Yes,
Huerter's a good Huerter. I don't know how to pronounce that, but he's been good. Collins is a good player. Capella, man, they got a. It's not just Trae Young and everyone else.
Like
they have a pretty solid team.
You
want
to hear a random thought of Capella?
What?
In the timeout, I'm going, does he dye his hair in that spot, or is that natural?
Right?
Because, darn, that looks good.
You got to spray paint just that on the baldy. Just get you a can of spray paint.
That's when I say I am so checked out as far as an analyst of basketball. Yeah. I just look at it just as a fan. Like,
so okay, so as a fan, who would you like to see in the finals?
So I would like to see Milwaukee in the finals because they're a small market team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to deal with Giannis being a champion and him being a champion as such a raw. He's still raw.
Very much so.
And very if he becomes so. A champion, then people are going to let off on him.
Mm.
And he's not going to be held to that standard of, he still needs to improve.
Yeah.
Because now he has that ring, right?
Yeah.
And I say that, and people listening, because I hear, well, this guy, he's a Super Bowl champion. Okay, but a brother can't make a free throw.
Yeah. Yeah. And
NBA champion.
But it always comes back to, I feel like there is a different standard for some of these younger players today than it was for the guys who came out like in the early 2000s, like the LeBrons, like the Chris Pauls, who, you know, maybe going to the finals. But those guys were
maybe.
Ring or not.
Did
ring
you
or
say
not.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. They up but 3-1 now.
Man,
so we'll see.
Stick a fork
cash the check. But you know what I'm saying? Like I have always felt like this last regime of superstars, the LeBrons, the Chris Pauls, the Carmelo Anthonys, it was do you got a ring or not?
Mm-hmm.
KD a little bit on the fringe of that. These got to your point, like this kind of next tier generation of your Westbrooks, your Hardens, Giannis, like they haven't really come under that kind of fire, at least. And this is a conversation me and the fellas were just having. Like it's been I don't want to say drop off, but it's a different type of criticism that they get. Similar to, I mean, I don't, you know, not to make it football versus basketball, but it has been times when you look at it as, well, does he have a ring? Well, what else?
Yeah.
Right. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So I just see Giannis as ideal. I think it'll be cool.
So Milwaukee and who would you?
Milwaukee, I got the Suns.
And Phoenix, Milwaukee, Phoenix.
I want the Clipper, but them deuces.
I think that'd be the most.
You know,
that'd be the most balanced matchup.
Here's what I am worried about though with Kawhi. Reading the reports, him and the injury.
Yeah. Why don't they just rule him out? I don't get it.
Him and the injury, and him becoming a free agent and knowing how he operates with injuries.
Yeah,
he ain't coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, I've wondered that, but it's some stuff behind. Yeah,
and it ain't no coming
and
back.
We went through that before, so all right, and well, I agree with that. So Milwaukee, Phoenix, we'll see what happens, man.
Well, that'd be fun to watch.
It would be. Yeah. It would be nice balance.
Do you think it'll go to 7 games?
Because
I don't
I go
know.
Six.
I don't know if Holiday can hang with.
CP, that's what I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for my guy, North Carolina born. Chris Paul, I want him to get a ring. Want him to get a ring. So I got to cheer for North Carolina. So I'm being non-biased. I want the Suns to win.
Right.
So that's what I'm going for.
Yeah. Who we got?
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Dante Stallworth, a veteran NFL wide receiver and a native of Sacramento, California. He's turned into a journalist, contributing to the Huffington Post, the New York Times, and CNN. Dante Stallworth on the Cut to It podcast. First segment is called Get Iced Up. Random icebreaker questions. We got to get you loose. You know Smitty very well. You don't know what direction he's going to go in. Smitty, go ahead and give him the first one.
All right. What sports do you enjoy watching other than football?
That's a good question.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's see. I ran track in high school, so I definitely enjoy watching track. I was terrible in high school at basketball, but I enjoy watching basketball.
I can see that.
Why are you
Hey. No, I've watched Dante, and he's very finesse,
mm-hmm.
and he's extremely fast.
Okay.
And sometimes he could be out of control.
Oh, okay. So like a Westbrook almost?
No.
Yeah. Give me that.
That's why I tried to lay it up.
What is something that always makes you laugh?
Family Guy.
The show?
Family Guy. The TV show Family Guy.
Never seen the show. Is that like with the big fat dude and the little kid with the big head?
Mm-hmm. All
right. Yeah, Stewie. Stewie Griffin.
What's so funny about the show?
It's so inappropriate that sometimes you just gotta laugh.
Okay.
You would enjoy it actually.
Oh, all right.
You should definitely put it in rotation.
No, I put it at the bottom of my list that I probably will never check. It just doesn't seem like a show I would. But you know what? Because my guy said I'll check out an episode or two. I probably should give it 2 episodes because I'm already walking in there I'm not gonna like the show.
You're not even gonna make it past the credits.
Hey, you just shortchanged me. Let me hand sanitize that hate.
That was a good one. I like that.
Kill those hating germs. So what is your biggest pet peeve?
I don't like being in wet clothes. Like, I love to run. I run outside. But when it's raining, I just can't do it. Wet socks, wet clothes, I need to have them off. There's something about wet clothes that I just don't like having on.
All right, last one. Family traditions.
one of the best things for me, especially growing up as a kid, was always my mother cooking at Thanksgiving. We would have a number of family members. We have a big family. My dad had 11 brothers and sisters, so you can just imagine how many cousins and relatives we had just on my dad's side alone. So my mother would cook for everyone, and she cooks really well. And so everyone would come over, and it was just kind of our way, or at least her way, of just, you know, bringing the family together. And even family who were hanging out, you know, at their own homes or went to see other family, they were always welcome to come get a plate. And there was always spades and dominoes playing and basketball playing outside. I never played basketball, but I was always ready to race anybody in the streets, you know, things like that. So we had that family tradition was always something that has always, you know, brought back good memories.
How do you play spades, Dante? You play Joker, Joker,
Deuce, 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 Joker, Joker, Deuce, Joker, Joker, Deuce. Yep.
Yeah. That's the proper way to play, I believe.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. So who was your favorite team growing up? Football, basketball, doesn't matter.
The San Francisco 49ers. 1994, I was a freshman in high school. And that was the year the year before 1993, when I say we, I'm speaking of the San Francisco 49ers in the 80s and 90s. So we had just lost to the Dallas Cowboys at home in Candlestick. Emmitt Smith ran all over us. Michael Irvin, Alvin Harper had some big plays. And Jay Novacek obviously coming through in the clutch on third downs. And the defense was really good. So the next year, we made some changes. We brought in Gary Plummer. We brought in Ken Norton from Dallas. We brought in the incomparable Deion Sanders, who didn't make it to the team until week three against the Saints, I believe. And at this time, I could tell you the roster of every team. I knew every coach, head coach, coordinators.
Was the street, yeah. though. That was the team, man. That was a team. Dallas, yeah. Oh, yeah. Dallas, oh, yeah. San Francisco, yeah. Philly. Mm-hmm. That's when everything went through the NFC. Yeah. Whoever in the NFC won, were pretty much winning the championship.
Yep.
And so who else? The Packers with Sterling. Mm-hmm. Then you have Philly when they had Keith Byers, left-handed, throwing a little toss sweep pass, a halfback pass, and they had Charlie Garner, right? Just all the different players, man. So the NFC – championship always went through the NFC, right? If you AFC teams ever had a chance.
I still have every game on VHS, by the way, recorded. Every game that season.
With the commercial.
From week one to the Super Bowl. All of it.
Wow.
All of it. VHS. No, actually, you know what? I used to hit the pause button to save tape on the end of that tape, because the tape would only – if you recorded it on SP, which was the highest quality at the time.
Yeah, it took up a lot of tape. Yep. It
took up 3 hours. So I would get one game each VHS tape. And that was my allowance. Whenever I had my allowance, I would save up for VHS tapes and posters and hang in my room. That was whatever I'd spent my money on.
Who's your favorite athlete growing up as a kid?
Woo.
Any sport?
My favorite athlete, I was a big football fan. Football was like 98%.
Give me the 2%.
The other 2% was probably history and science. I was a nerd as a kid, and I enjoyed learning about world history, learning about American history, and a lot of the things that I grew up in, even today still. Are things that kind of harken back to my childhood with, you know, which history I write about, politics and the history of politics, the history of sports, things like that. So it's all come kind of connected. But I would say probably my favorite athlete was, I would have to say Deion. I was thinking between, because my four favorite football players were really in no order, probably between Barry Sanders, and Bo Jackson were my four. Ooh. And those are my guys.
Good Mount Rushmore right there.
That is.
Man, that's a Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. I actually saw Jerry. We can get to that later, but I actually saw Jerry Rice as a kid, and he called the police on me. But I stalked because I was stalking him. I was 14 years old.
We need that story.
I'm like, oh, we can talk about that later. Nah, he didn't call the police on me. It was their training camp. We were in Rockland, and I was with a high school teammate of mine who lived north of Rockland, and I'm from Sacramento, so I was going, to his home in Grass Valley. Huh?
You going to Jerry's home?
No, my high school quarterback.
You said stalking, yeah, and then you said Jerry. Home, I thought you were
really... No, I actually didn't know what.
That was Dean calling the police.
And then I was in the bush.
With binoculars.
So I'll give you the quicker version. So the quicker version is, as we're driving by Rockland, this is during the summer, and this is right around the time when training camp is starting. And so I knew everything about Jerry Rice. He's one of my favorite players, one of my favorite athletes. So I knew that his wife's name was Jackie. I knew that, I just knew his family dynamic. Anything about Jerry Rice I had read about because I loved him so much as a kid. And so as we were stopping to get gas, in front of us, there was a little convertible, like a blue-ish Mercedes with the license plate that said something like, "For you, Jackie," or "Jackie." And I remember looking like, oh, that's Jerry Rice's wife's name. And then I looked at the person in the car, which I was behind, and I'm like, yo, that's Jerry. And my teammate was like, how can you tell that's Jerry Rice? And back of his head, I'm like, bro, I know that bean head. That's Jerry Rice, bro. Follow him. Mm-hmm. So we followed him. I'm 15 years old. This is my favorite player of all time.
Now the criminal act begins. Right. Follow him.
Right.
Follow him. Hey, this way. Follow him.
I got his plates.
Right. Right.
Make your right. Make a left on Bangor.
Yeah, but you wasn't stalking him.
Going north, southwest.
For me, it was my deductive reasoning that we're in Rockland. It's training camp. It's a Mercedes Benz. Jackie's a license plate. That's his wife's name. And I know Jerry. I know the back of Jerry Rice's head.
He's an African American man.
Hey, but I'm telling you, we didn't even get gas. We followed Jerry, right? So I think, and we're in this beat up. We're in this beat up pickup truck, right? And he just sees two guys following him. So he's, in his mind, I'm not thinking this at the time. I'm 15 years old, right? This is my idol. I'm going to, like, say hi to him. So, I was all about it. So we pulled in, he pulled in, which, there were a lot of cars, and I figured this was the 49ers parking only, 49ers only parking. But we followed him in. And then, so he drove around the parking lot inside. So we stopped, right? And then we're like, okay, we're following him now. Let's just pull over here and wait till he gets out of his car. So he parks up close. And as we see him park up close, we get out of the car and start walking towards him. Now we're probably about 50 yards away from the entrance where he's walking into. Jerry's out of his car and he's looking in our direction and he's pointing at us to security. And security is like looking at us as we're walking up. And so then the security starts walking towards us and Jerry walks in the building. And he's like, hey, you guys can't be in here. And we were like, oh, we just wanted to say hi to Jerry. And he's like, that's fine, I understand it, but you're not allowed to be in here. And so we left. And I wasn't like, oh, I just stalked Jerry Rice. I was like, oh my God, I just said what's up to Jerry Rice. That was my story. So I had met my idol. And of course I had like exaggerated the whole encounter. I didn't tell anyone that we stalked him partially, but he was probably like, these dudes right here have followed me from this light and y'all need to make sure that, they're not gonna run up in here and try to do whatever. So yeah, so he didn't necessarily call the police on me. That was obviously hyperbole, but he did what, any self-aware human being would have done when you had two people following you in a beat up pickup truck.
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we gotta pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut to It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. cuttoitpodcast.com.
We obviously know you grew up in Northern California, so it's a great transition. So tell me where are you from and a place you call your hometown.
Hometown is Sacramento, California, North area. Went to Grant High School and, you know, we were called the Grant High Pacers, blue and gold. And we have, you know, a number of players from my high school who have played and are playing, you know, in the NFL now. Shaq Thompson, obviously, from the Carolina Panthers, he's been holding it down. And, you know, it's just been great to see, you know, not just from California or, I'm sorry, from my high school, but just from, you know, Sacramento and the Sacramento surrounding areas, a lot of professional athletes, a lot of NFL players are coming out of the area. And it's been fun to sit back and watch these guys grow as humans, as people, and as NFL players.
Growing up in Sacramento, now you're older. Living in D.C., you traveled New England, New Orleans, Baltimore, all these different places, Miami. How would you say, with all that you've experienced and seen in your adulthood, how would you categorize Sacramento impacting the way you see the world today and just how you are based on all your experiences, seeing all those different places?
I think just being born and raised in Sacramento, you know, my mother did a great job of raising us. I have three other brothers and sisters, and you know, my mother was very grounded in Christianity, and so she instilled a lot of that in us. And also, Mama didn't play; she had the belt or spatula or whatever else was on hand to tie in that spirituality, that religious, those religious teachings with the belt. And a lot of that comes from, you know, just my upbringing, being in Sacramento, seeing, you know, being in Sacramento, but also realizing that, that the world was a lot bigger than Sacramento. So I don't think that it impacted me in any kind of a negative sense. I think that, you know, growing up where, you know, Sacramento, there are, like any other inner city, there are gangs and drugs and violence. And growing up in Sacramento where I grew up, in high school that I went to, that was not immune from any of those things. But, you know, just the sense of community that we have in Sacramento, the sense of brotherhood, I think a lot of that, it all surrounded around my high school football team. And that, more than anything, brought a lot of people together. So I understood at a young age how important sports were, bringing people together. And I think that stayed with me, you know, through all my travels, you know, throughout the NFL and college, post-NFL, politics, I think is as divisive as we've become as a nation. I think the one thing that people can all agree on is how much football has played an integral part. No matter what your politics are, no matter what your political ideology or alliances are, I think when people get, you know, a football game, you know, it's all about their team versus your team. And somehow I've you know, no one has mastered it, but you know, somehow you try to find a connection between, you know, what we can do as a nation to build a better cohesive, egalitarian society where people can get along, you know, with different political ideologies at a football game, but take that to the next step and where they can get along and try to progress together as a nation instead of being extremely divisive as we are.
Where did your thirst for knowledge come from? When you mentioned you're big in history, science, education, where did that thirst of knowledge come from?
Oh, you know what? I don't know, man. It's as long as I can remember, I was always, as a kid, I used to read the encyclopedias that we had at home. I would always, in the libraries that we would have, and we would go to, like, you know, as a kid in elementary school, I would always check out like the Greek mythology books, the ancient Egypt. I loved reading about hieroglyphics and just all these things about world history. And I honestly, I don't know where it came from, but I do know that my parents helped foster that by, you know, getting me books, buying me a telescope before they bought me a football. All these things kind of nurtured my curiosity. And I think probably the biggest thing that enabled me to understand how big the world was that I was enamored with astronomy, with space, learning about the planets. So I knew that, you know, starting off as a kid, I knew that the world was bigger than Sacramento. And that, I believe that directly came from my love of learning about the planets and learning about how different planets operate and why they are the colors they are, the size they are, these different things intrigued me as a kid. And it just kind of, my intellectual curiosity blossomed as a child. And it's, you know, it's I think it's still there. It's something that, you know, I always enjoy learning about more things, more history. There's so much that's out there to be learned, and no one can know everything. So we're on a constant journey of learning no matter how old we get.
Did you travel a lot when you were younger?
In my mind, I did. I didn't have the means to, but when I did have the means, I actually didn't until probably a few years after I was in the NFL. I didn't get my passport till I was forced to, because when I was playing for the Patriots in 2007, we were supposed to go to China to play a preseason game. And so we had to make sure that everyone had passports. And I did not, no, I did have my passport at that time. I had just gotten my passport before free agency started. I'm sorry. So, and I didn't travel actually until that offseason. That was the first time that I had traveled. And I went to Spain. Actually, me and Reggie Bush went together. He was shooting a commercial with David Beckham. So he had to be up at 6:30 in the morning every day for the first 3 or 4 days. And I was just out seeing, you know, Madrid.
Gallivant. Like that.
Yeah. You know what? I had some fun. You know, I was 22 years old. I had some
word.
Fun.
That was a key word. Like, he's not going to lie, but he's not going to incriminate himself again. This is great discussion, man. Let's get right. Let's jump right into your career, because you were drafted in the first round. You went to Tennessee, and we're going to get into that, man. You went to University of Tennessee, the Volunteers, and bro, you were on I look at the roster of some of the players, and you were ordained to just get the opportunity to play in the league, because you were playing with some guys that just are remarkable. But we'll get to that later. The 13th overall pick to the New Orleans Saints. You play excellent. You had a great career. Had some hard work, had some hard times. You know, but I really want to get into the thing that changed your life forever. Right? And the reason I say it, and why I want to jump into that, because a lot of times when us athletes, when we make mistakes, so many people feel whenever we say something, they only bring that up to almost shut us up, to tell us, well, you did this, so shut the blank up.
Or dehumanize
you. And dehumanize you. And so I wanted you to take us through that, because one, I also know, you know, to that's your mission, and it has impacted you. And you're very forthright with that information. And you spoke to a number of teams. Yeah. And so I want our audience to hear your story and what it has done, how has it impacted both families, and you know, and what you have to deal with just your part. And now the family has to deal with what they have to, but what you have to deal with your part every single day.
So this was the off season in 2009. I was coming off of my worst year career-wise in football. I had been hurt. You know, I had a couple of muscle injuries, and I just, you know, speed is my game, so I wasn't able to utilize my speed, which kind of rendered me useless for the season, and even in the games, the few games that I did play in. And I had just signed a 7-year, $35 million deal with the Cleveland Browns. And there it was $10 million in guarantees. And, you know, I think I ended up catching like 17 passes that year. And I was utterly useless in my own mind. And so I knew that I had to get back on track. I didn't want to, I felt like I had let my teammates down. I felt like I had let myself down. And so I wanted to work my way back into the best shape that I had ever been in so I could come out and help my team win some games and play, be the player that they had paid me to be. And so the last weekend before everyone was heading back to their respective teams to start their offseason program in 2009, there was a lot of guys we would train down in South Florida, specifically in Miami. And, you know, we trained really hard that Friday. Fridays are always, you know, the hard days. So we trained really hard, and a couple of guys ended up leaving from the place where we work out, went to go grab a bite to eat. Then I grabbed a bite to eat. Then I ended up getting home about 7:38. I went upstairs. I was so tired from the day because I had, you know, expended so much energy on that Friday workout. And I knew that I had to get ready to go that Sunday to go to Cleveland to start the offseason program. So I ended up falling asleep. And I get a phone call about 1:45, 2:00 from a teammate of mine asking me to come hang out with him for his birthday. There was a lot of guys that was going to be there. And so we were all going to kind of meet up and, you know, have one last drink before we all left to go to our respective teams to work out. So I got there, you know, I got up, showered, went to the club. I got there, had a few drinks, and I was there for probably a few hours. And then, so I got home I don't remember what time it was, maybe 5:30 in the morning. And I went to sleep. I got home, fell asleep. And I woke up around 7:00, close to 7:00. And I didn't have any food in my home. I couldn't cook at the time. So I didn't have any food. And the only place that I knew that was open was a place on the beach called News Cafe. And I was in this time, I had just, my condo had just finished being built in Miami. So I was living right across the bridge in downtown Miami, which is right across from the American Airlines Arena where the Miami Heat play. So this the only place that I knew that was open, you know, it was still dark out. So I was just gonna go to this place, and I was texting other friends, seeing if they were up to meet me there. No one was up. So, I ended up driving across the bridge, and that was when I encountered Mr. Reyes running across the highway. And by the time I could really, react or anything, I had hit him. And, you know, there was so much misinformation that initially, in initial reports, people were saying that reports were saying I was going 80 miles an hour. Said that I ran onto a curb, ran a red light, which none of those things were true. But I just, you know, I didn't really care about that. I just initially wanted to know that that the man that I had just hit with my car was okay. And I didn't get any notification from the police. They didn't tell me anything until I waived my Miranda rights and went down to which any attorney will tell you never to do, but I didn't feel I felt like I was not trying to hide anything. I wanted to help whatever they needed. And so I waived my Miranda rights, went down to the police station and gave my statement. But, you know, right before I gave my statement, the lead investigator of that case came out and told me that after I'd asked him multiple times prior, he came out and told me that Mr. Reyes didn't make it. And so, you know, I as any normal human being would do, I broke down crying because I was like, not because of any trouble that I had thought that I was in. It was
you got some heavy information in which you were the driver and it was part of your participation.
Right, right. And that hit me, man, because, you know, I was the kind of guy, like, I pretty much got along with everyone. I had never been in a fight, you know, in my life. I didn't mess with anybody. Nobody really messed with me. So I was just, you know, I wasn't that kind of guy. And, you know, to ever, like, even want to, like, even harm anyone in a physical fight or anything. So that really hit me hard. And, you know, and obviously I was concerned about, I didn't know anything about Mr. Reyes, but I obviously understood that, you know, as time went on, that he had a family, that he was, you know, had a 15-year-old daughter, and obviously, you know, had parents and siblings. So that was hard. It was a very difficult time for me, you know, dealing with and coming to terms with all of that. But I think 2 weeks later, I gave my first statement publicly. And afterwards, I was not allowed to communicate with the family directly. We had to communicate through the channels of my attorney with their attorney. And they wanted my attorney to know, the family of Mr. Reyes wanted my attorney to know that they appreciated how I handled everything. And I was pretty dumbfounded that they would be thanking me for the way I handled everything. They were complimentary of you know, me taking the initial steps. Unfortunately, in these situations, when there's a driver, whether the driver's been under the influence or not, they tend to flee the scene. And that, as the any psychologist or even state attorney's office will tell you, that is a natural reaction. It's fight or flight sense, and people. And but, you know, that was not saying that I'm a good person or any of this stuff. But you know, that was never my intention. And my intention was for what happened to Mr. Reyes, and tried to get, you know, tried to call 911 and get them out there as soon as possible. And so all of these things actually really played in my favor. Not thinking about it at the time, but all of these things played into my favor, you know, at the end of the plea agreement, the fact that I stayed on the scene, the fact that I was the first one to call 911 after multiple or a dozen calls. You know, I waived my Miranda rights to go down to speak to the police. All these things had a positive effect on my situation at the end. And so, you know, I understood that there were no winners in anything, that any outcome that was going to happen. You know, if I went to jail for 10 years or if I didn't go to jail at all, there were none of that would give any retribution. It wouldn't bring Mr. Reyes back, and it wouldn't take my mind off of the fact every day that I played a role in someone losing their life. And so I knew at that moment that I had two decisions that I could make. I could fade into obscurity and never speak to anyone again and just go about my life and never talk about it again. Or I could put myself on Front Street and be allowed, you know, be susceptible and vulnerable to attacks. But when I started to think about the work that I could do, the work that I could help other people with, then all of that became a shield for people that want to attack me, that just want me to invalidate any other topics or any other conversation that I bring up. So, it's always hard. It's hard to talk about at any time. You know, it's been more than a decade and it's still just as fresh on my mind as it happened yesterday. But the thing, again, that I said that I use as a shield is to know that when I'm speaking, especially when I go, I've spoken at, you know, multiple universities, to incoming freshmen, to athletes, both men and women's sports. I've done a promotional videos for the NHL, for the NFL, obviously, working on doing some things with the NBA. So I've been active in trying to, you know, raise awareness, not necessarily for driving under the influence, but just for decision-making in general. Mm-hmm. And how we, you know, how when we make decisions, you know, they can all culminate to a situation where their snowball effect happens. And now, you know, you've made so many seemingly benign or minor decisions that culminate into a snowball effect where now it's out of your control and you can't handle it. So my job, I feel, is to make people aware of those minor decisions that they're making, and try to stop them from even getting to that snowball so they can control, you know, a majority of the things and not have any self-inflicted wounds with consistent decisions that they're making, everyday decisions that they're making that may not seem like bad decisions you know, as you're making them. But when you look back on things in hindsight, it's like, oh, you know, this could have been prevented if I wouldn't have done X, Y, Z or A, B, C. So I've been able to, you know, speak at different companies, speak in front of kids. And all of this I've taken to, you know, as just as me not falling into obscurity, me not crawling into a hole, you know, or moving somewhere out of the country and just living my life and not talking to anyone again. And I feel like that would be cowardly of me. I feel like that would be running away from my responsibility that I have to continue to try to help people and give them an assessment of my journey and how I got there and how they can prevent going down a similar path.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
To go through all of that and to know the trauma that has happened, of course, to other people, but then yourself, how have you been able to take care of yourself from a mental health standpoint and be able to apply self-care?
You know what? I was in a pretty bad place, as you know, anyone would be. I was in a pretty bad place initially. And I think my first steps to healing came when the family reached out after 2 weeks. I turned myself into the police and posted bail. But that's when I gave my first public statement. And shortly after that, they thanked me, you know, for the way I handled things from, you know, from the onset, which honestly started my healing process. It didn't happen that day or the next day or the next week or the next year. But I think the fact that the family was appreciative of, you know, how I handled things and forgiving. And they were instrumental, honestly, in the plea agreement, you know, and the reason why people don't, you know, they see a black and white situation where, you know, someone was under the influence and hit someone with their car and that person died and they don't see, you know, why I didn't go to prison for 10 years. But, you know, there were a lot of things that I won't relitigate, but, you know, the family understood the facts of the case and anyone who was involved understood the facts of the case. But the family was also instrumental. And a lot of people don't know this. I don't know if I've said this publicly or not, but the family didn't want me to do any jail time. They didn't want to go to court. They didn't want, because basically my defense would have had to have, you know, defending myself would have had to have put
I know what you're saying.
Cloud over the entire case.
Over the circumstances of all of it.
Right. And so no one wanted that. I didn't want that. The family didn't want that. And so they were instrumental in a lot of things. And again, they didn't want me to serve any time in jail, honestly.
Serve any time, but you've also...
I did 30 days, but you know, they basically sentenced me with a DUI.
And you got a DUI, 30 days in jail, but you also you're not allowed or ever to have a driver's license, correct?
Yeah, I cannot. My driver's license in Florida is suspended for life. I guess I can apply for a license elsewhere. I live in Washington, D.C. I've been here for almost 7 years, but you know, driving again has never been something that's on my mind. I'm lucky to live in a city where, you know, It's pretty easy to get around. There's a lot of people that walk around in DC. And
he was in Baltimore doing the internship when I was there. Yeah. And he didn't drive there either.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I learned that about him. You know, just, you know, a lot of people just see one thing and they go, oh, you know, but there's things that you've been experiencing almost 10 plus years now that's literally every day of his life that he,
yeah,
you know, obviously the family has to deal with that as well. But it, you know, I guess one of the questions I've always wanted to ask you, I know I've been in car accidents when I was a young kid, and there's times where when I go to sleep or I close my eyes, I can see mental images of things. Have you experienced that?
And honestly, it's one of the reasons why I don't necessarily care, at least at this point, to like drive again. And it's something that, you know, I had to, luckily I was very reluctant, but the NFL essentially forced me to see a therapist, you know, shortly after it happened. And, you know, just as an NFL player, you know, our whole mentality is to
grind through it.
Right. And to not let your opponent
compartmentalize,
see your weaknesses, right? Mental, physical weaknesses. Don't let them see you tired, right? When we're training and we're doing these sprints, no bending over, no bending your hands on your knees, stand up. You know what I mean? All these types of things that are ingrained in you as a player, and it's not necessarily easy to switch those things off, you know, in real life, in actual life, outside of the football game. So there were a lot of things in those therapy sessions, man, that I learned about myself that I didn't know I was that were kind of like hidden beneath the surface. And you know, without those therapy sessions, I don't know, you know, where I would be right now. So I'm actually glad that the NFL did that. And it also enabled me to realize, like, you know, and I studied psychology in school. You'd think I would understand this, but I think the football aspect of my life kind of took that over. But, it, you know, when you're speaking to a therapist, there's just this societal norm that it's shunned upon. Mm. And, you know, everyone needs someone to talk to, whether we talk to our significant other, we talk to our family members, our best friends. We all speak to someone in times of need, in times of advice. We need someone, but you have a professional.
What are some of the things, if you don't mind sharing, that you discovered through therapy that were beneath those, the root of some of the things that you may not even, you didn't even know were there?
I think there was a lot of built up anger that I didn't realize was there. Mm-hmm. Anger at me putting myself in that situation. Anger at people who didn't, you know the situation, but just kind of saw, you know, the XYZ and they came to their own determination. Not at all anger at Mr. Reyes, just anger that I put myself in that position, and anger at a lot of the
fallout of what transpired after.
Yeah. And because I hadn't realized it, but I had hit it really well, because again, it was I needed to stay focused on my task at hand. And the anger just was kind of pushed off to the side. And
now, hold on, though. After you went all through this, go through a trial during this process, where were the Cleveland Browns?
Well, they had just brought in a new head coach, and honestly, there were a couple people behind the scenes that were reaching out, you know, checking on me and asking if I could. Yeah. I was very appreciative, and honestly, I'll be real, man. I know. A lot of he gets a bad rap, and some of the things, you know, obviously I don't agree with that. Some of the decisions that he's made, especially, you know, earlier on as his tenure as commissioner, but Roger Goodell was very instrumental as well, which surprised me. I didn't know him at all. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, this is like my first time meeting him in this situation. And
you're in trouble. You
know, yeah, you know what I mean?
Meet the commish while you in trouble.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to go over very well.
Right, right. And I had an opportunity to speak to him one-on-one. He invited me in his office. And one of the things he told me, it was just he and I, one of the things he told me was, you know, before you walk in this office, you're not walking in here as an NFL player and I'm not the commissioner. You're walking in here as a man and you're walking into my office and I'm a man and we're going to have a man-to-man conversation. So basically he was like, take off your football hat. This has nothing to do with football, has nothing to do with business. We're just talking man-to-man. And he shared some things with me that I was like, why is he telling me all these personal things? But, you know, at the end of it, I realized that, you know, even through everything, he and people he had spoken with and, you know, other owners that I had played for at other teams, he understood, you know, from what he told me and what he'd heard from them was that, you know, he's not a bad guy at all. He's just, he's a good guy that just made a horrible decision and the outcome was very bad. You know, the outcome was something that was irreparable, right? And so we talked a lot about you know, moving forward and what I saw in myself, what I saw that I could do moving forward, not just to help myself, but to help society as a whole and obviously help other people in the NFL. And that was the conversation. And that was the conversation before he suspended me. He even asked me, like, you know, what do you think? He's like, if you were in my shoes at the end of the conversation, he said, if you were in my shoes, what would you do? And I said, I would probably be suspended for at least the season. And that's what he did. I'm not saying he took my word for it, but you know, that's what he did. And we had a great conversation. I still talk to him till this day. I can text him, or maybe before COVID, I could text him and say, hey, I'm in New York. You know, are you free tomorrow around this time? And he'd say, yeah, I'll make time, come through. And he would make time for me. We'd speak for an hour or two, talk about the state of the NFL, society. And I felt like I really had his ear. And even throughout, you know, the whole thing with the protests, I talked to him a number of times and we, you know, and told him some things that I thought that was not, you know, that was not okay with what the NFL was doing and things that he wanted to do moving forward. And I appreciate him, you know, for he was there. He was there for me and checking on me regularly, and he didn't have to. You know, I was suspended. I was out of the league, essentially. And, you know, he had no reason to, he had every reason to kind of wipe his hands with me and no reason to continue our communication and to continue to talk to me, but he did. And so I will always be grateful for him for that. And, you know, he was one of the people who were very instrumental, you know, in helping me get back into the league and talking to me throughout that whole process, even when I was suspended.
Appreciate your time, man. Appreciate you taking the time to really tell your story, mm-hmm. you know, to tell you why and what you've experienced, what you've gone through, how you've overcome it. Man, we don't take that information and the message and your transparency lightly. So thank you, brother.
I appreciate you. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent, and most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn,
and this is Cut to It.
Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., that is me, is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Show. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.